Fishing like a local isn't just about catching fish. It's about connecting with the environment and the people who call it home. It's about hearing the stories and traditions that have been passed down for generations and sharing unforgettable moments with the people you meet along the way. Fishing like a local is having an experience that stays with you forever. And with Fishing Booker, you can experience it too, no matter where you are. Discover your next adventure on Fishing Booker.
This upcoming concert season will be all about the boots, and Tecovas is your stop for the best in Western style. Tecovas has seasonal and limited edition offerings this spring and summer, including men's and women's boots, apparel, hats, bags, and more. All Tecovas boots are made by hand in a time-honored tradition with timeless styles that are always on trend. And Tecovas has first wear comfort with little to no break-in period. It's hard to find this level of comfort paired with this level of style. Stop by your local Tecovas store, have a complimentary drink or two, that's WCB style, and shop new styles. The smell of fresh leather and friendly staff are at your service. Many stores even have leather custom branding to make your boots truly personalized, and with regular live music and events, there's no in-store experience like it. If you can't make it into a store, just visit tecovas.com, that's T-E-C-O-V-A-S.com. They offer free shipping on all boots, as well as free returns and exchanges, and ship right to your door. Go to tecovas.com and find your new favorite pair of boots today.
Welcome to the Casting Across Fly Fishing Podcast. I'm Matthew of castingacross.com, where I explore the quarry and culture of fly fishing. On this 284th episode of the podcast, we're going to be talking about fly fishing in urban and suburban settings. But before we get to that, I did want to address a few administrative details. First and foremost, there's a lot of new listeners to the podcast, so thank you very much for listening. Please subscribe, and as you have time and opportunity, head over to iTunes and leave a rating and a review. That is very, very helpful in growing this audience and in allowing this to spread to a wider listener base. Also, if you haven't taken a opportunity to go to castingacross.com, I would say do so. There's a lot more of what I talk about over on the website, years and years and years of content there. And along those lines, I'm always looking for recommendations. I'm looking for recommendations for fly shops. So I have a fly shop directory with nearly 400 fly shops in the country. So if you don't see yours there or you find one that's closed down, please let me know. I always am looking for book recommendations. I do have a stack I'm working through, but I'm always happy to add to that stack. So whether you have published something or you simply enjoyed something, do let me know about it. And then lastly, any sort of gear question or fishing question or whatever, happy to hear that. So Matthew@castingacross.com. Well, without delaying any further, let's talk about fly fishing, urban and suburban water. Why do this? Am I advocating that you stop heading into the woods, stop going into the backcountry to go and fish in canals and in channels and amidst the skyscrapers? That's not what I'm saying. I want to make sure that that is clear. But there is water in these places, and there are fish in the water in these places. And there's always water in cities. I mean, unless you're in an arid climate, people settle around water. Water was needed for drinking. Water was needed for powering equipment back in the time when hydropower was not necessarily giant dams, but like mills and things like that. And also, water was used for transportation. And so there is water in all of our major cities, again, outside of arid climates. And there's nothing about that water that means that you can't fish it. Now, legality aside, but we'll talk about that in a moment. There are fish, like I said, in these rivers, in these ponds, in these streams, even in these canals, ditches, and channels. And it is worth checking out if that is A, all you can do because of time, because of resources, because of transportation. You're not able to get out to Montana. You're not able to get deep into the woods of the Appalachians or something like that. But what you can do is maybe, ride your bike down to the local pond, or local stream. This is an opportunity. Secondly, there are some pretty remarkable fishing choices for you in big cities. So if you're only traveling and you want to get a couple of casts in, or if you're just looking for adventure, then this is a viable option. In fact, I would say for me, where I am right now, my best carp fishing is going to be in cities, and not even in big rivers, but in canals. So if I want to go catch a big carp from where I am, north shore of Boston, southern New Hampshire, then I am going to go to a couple of cities that have some canal systems. For you, that may very well be a similar situation where that's where the big bass are, that's where all the panfish are, that's where the trout might even be. So those are the two major reasons: one, out of necessity, and two, out of the challenge. So again, this is not to elevate urban fishing or even suburban fishing up beyond those pastoral settings that we often associate, and rightly associate, with the traditional fly fishing aesthetic, but it is providing us a more holistic, wider range of opportunities to pursue as we chase fish however we can, whenever we can. So we're going to talk about a few different things today. First and foremost, how do you find this water? Secondly, how do you approach this water? And within that, I'll try to sprinkle in a few anecdotes to illustrate these points. So how do you find this water? Well, the internet is a wealth of information. The internet is an absolute wealth of information. You hop online, you put fly fishing Boston, fly fishing Atlanta, fly fishing Chicago, fly fishing, you know, St. Louis, wherever it might be, and you're going to find something. It's going to be a message board. It's going to maybe even be a book. One of the things that I have been really impressed with in the last few years is how the different fly fishing guides have really added urban angling opportunities into what they offer. But again, message boards are going to give you that up-to-the-date information. And even if it is outdated, even if it's from like 13, 14 years ago, in fact, that just happened as I was getting ready to get on and start recording, as I wanted to look something up. And the most recent information was from 2012, but it was still pertinent. It was still helpful. Certainly things have changed, but it was still helpful information on a message board. So that's the first thing to do. The second thing is just to get out and walk. I remember I was in between two appointments in Boston a few years ago, and I just was going for a walk. And the amount of fish that I spied with my naked eye as I was walking and looking at ponds, looking at creeks, and looking at where these things emptied into the Charles River, I saw lots and lots of fish. I saw carp, I saw bass, I saw panfish, all sorts of stuff swimming around in these waterways. And so the naked eye does a really great job. I can remember actually a few years ago, I had to take a call. And so I pulled over and I'm sitting in my car having this conversation. And I kind of get jittery when I talk. I mean, you may even hear my chair squeaking as I record my podcast because I'm kind of constantly swiveling back and forth when I talk. And so I'm on the phone and I'm getting jittery in my car. And so I hop out, lock the car door, and start walking around. And it's not a great part of town, but I'm walking on a little kind of pathway in between a canal on one side and a large river on the other. And I'm doing my best to focus and to concentrate, but the number and the size of largemouth bass in this canal in the middle of this relatively large city, in the top 15 cities in Massachusetts, was blowing me away. And I was trying to get off the phone as fast as I could because I didn't have my gear with me, but I thought I can probably salvage this day by going and getting my fly rod. But just walk around and take a look and see what is there. Now, I will say that it is important to figure out what you can do and where you can do it. What you can do and where you can do it. I've had situations where I have been fishing in urban settings and I've been told you can't do that here. Now, sometimes that is by a passerby who just assumes that I can't do that there. And sometimes it has been by law enforcement, whether it be National Park Service or whether it be police officers or whether it be folks that they're not law enforcement, but they're you know, city employees or even store owners. And my recommendation is always, as far as is within your power, be at peace with all men. And so to not be the kind of jerk that starts recording and starts, you know, saying that, you know, I can fish here, you know, that's not a way to win battles. More often than not, it is just a random chance encounter. And if you move away a little bit and fish, that's not going to happen again. If it continues to happen, then you have to figure that out. And you have to have that conversation. But particularly if it's with law enforcement, regardless of the flavor that it is, even if it's just a security guard, the best thing to do is to be pleasant and be compliant. Don't bend over, but be, you know, again, be pleasant, be compliant, because it's not just you fishing that you are, but you know, dealing with. It's anyone who wants to fish after you. It's anyone else wants to recreate after you. So that is my little soapbox thing. Now, again, I'm not a pushover. I want to lean into the rights that we have as public landowners. But at the same time, I think that we need to be judicious and be considerate and be discerning in the battles that we choose to fight. This actually happened. I was fishing with a friend in a national park up here, and it's a national historic park. And so there was a lot of the concern from the ranger was that we were going to hook somebody. And you know what? Where we were fishing, as the day were to go on, there was going to be a lot of people there. And so completely reasonable request. Didn't say no fishing, but please don't fish right here, right now. And you know what? Could we have leaned into it and made a stink? We could have, but it just wasn't worth it because that's a place that particularly he wants to fish over and over again. And so those are just things to consider. Another issue that comes with fishing in urban environments is just people are going to think you're being mean to fish. And so practice good fish handling tactics. You know, practice catch and release. Do the kind of things that you ought to be doing. You probably are doing, but just remember that you are under a microscope, which can be helpful. You know, you might do something dumb when you're out by yourself in the middle of the woods, and you know, you're just thinking, all right, I'm just going to take care of this fish and, you know, just pop it off, grab it with my dry, dirty hand, and throw it back in. But you know, really take a moment to take care of those fish, because again, it's not just you; it's you and anyone else who comes after you, and the perception of fly fishing. Fishers, anglers, outdoors folks in general. So that is another thing to think about. Now, kind of on a corollary to that, a lot of people think, oh my goodness, I'm going to be a spectacle. Now, you may embrace that, but I think for most of us, we probably don't really want to be a spectacle. I found one of two things happens. First and foremost, people don't see you. If you are doing something unobtrusive, like fishing, if you are not, you know, trying to bomb a 80 and 90 foot casts into the reflecting pool at the Washington Monument, which I don't know if you can fish there. But anyway, if you're not trying to bomb out these super long casts and doing showy stuff, you are going to blend in at a degree that is remarkable. There have been so many times, I can think of one local town here, there's a little trout stream that flows through it, where I've been fishing, you know, just little roll casts here and there, watching my drift, and people will be walking within feet of me and not see me. And it's not like I'm wearing camouflage. It's not like I'm trying to be sneaky, but it's just amazing how few people see you, particularly people who are driving. I am paranoid about some of my quote unquote secret fishing spots. And so I will park my car, I will keep my rod low, I'll wait till no one's driving, and then I'll scamper across the street and I'll get into the underbrush. And one of the things that I've really try to do first and foremost to make myself chill out, but also just as a kind of a experiment is as I'm fishing in the stream, I try to find that line of sight for people. And, you know, particularly if the light's right, you can see where people are looking, and people just don't look down, which is probably safe when they're driving. They're looking at the road, maybe looking around them, looking ahead and looking in that peripheral vision, but they don't look down into the river. They don't look into that, you know, quick, split second, turn your head, look down into the water. I mean, you and I might as anglers, but most people don't. And so I've been literally, you know, feet away from the guardrail fishing, and people won't stop and look at me. Or they'll see it and they'll just think there's a person in the water. And it's, you know, obviously there's crazy people out there. And so I'm just one more of them. But it's amazing how few people will actually see you if you are in the water and you're not making a spectacle of yourself. So if that's one of the concerns, oh, everyone's going to gawk, everyone's going to, you know, the cops aren't calling me right away. It's amazing how unobtrusive and how inconspicuous fly fishermen are as we are in the water and as we are fishing. So that's something else to think of if you think this is going to totally mess things up. And again, those remarkable moments and experiences sometimes define it. So it's the, you know, the lady or the guy, Karen, I don't care, what's the male Karen, Chad, something to that effect, you know, when they come out of their backyard and they live adjacent to the pond and they say, you can't fish here, this is private property, and you know it's not, and you just keep moving, and they may harass you, and it may make you feel like, all right, this is going to happen every time I go out. But that is atypical. I mean, that's happened, maybe happens to me once a year by somebody saying that I can't fish in the subdivision pond. I remember that frequently. So Northern Virginia, lived there for a number of years when I was in middle school, when I was in high school, lived there for a little bit as an adult, go back and visit there frequently to see family. And that happens every once in a while. And as a kid, I would, you know, kind of be a little snarky to it. Now, you know, just, okay, thank you. And just move to a point where they're, you know, they can no longer see you and just keep fishing. There's amazing fishing opportunities because I think a lot of people assume that you can't fish there. Or even if you can fish there, there's not fish there, because how would fish get in this little 2-acre pond? But it, particularly in warmer climates, it is astounding how many fish get in these ponds and what they can do if they are not predated upon by people or by critters. So again, if there's a bunch of muskrats, it's one thing. If there's a bunch of herons, something. There's, you know, people that are going to catch their dinner there. That's something else. But it is just amazing how many fish can get into these small ponds. And sometimes they abut people's fences. They abut people's backyards. And as long as you're respectful, you pick up trash, you don't throw litter, you pick up trash, right? You don't throw trash down. But even if you find trash, you pick it up. That's a great way, again, of preserving these angling opportunities for yourself and for other people. All right, so this has all been very, very general information. How to find the water, what to do when you get there. Well, how do you fish this water? And I would say you fish it like you fish anywhere else. The only thing that I think is worth noting is that a lot of times these fish are used to people. So you may be able to get away with a little bit of a less stealthy presentation if these are not pressured fish. And I would say, by all means, find a fly that imitates a crust of bread. Find a fly that imitates something that people are throwing into the water, because I see it as a perfectly reasonable way to pursue these fish. My buddy and I would fish the honey bug in a stream in Pennsylvania, and it is basically a smushed egg fly. And we would just lather the thing up with floatant because there was a bridge upstream where people would feed the fish, and we would get downstream. These weren't hatchery trout or anything like that. These were just fish that knew that this little thing that was white and puffy floating on the water was a food source. And so we would fish the bread hatch. And I know that lots of other folks in places like that do the same thing. But honestly, I've always thought, man, like a cigarette butt. I've seen plenty of trout go after the filtered end of a cigarette butt. That'd be a good fly to tie. Just a little piece of cork. And then they would go after it. You're just adapting to what's around you. But there's other interesting food sources that you find. These manicured, gardens that surround some of these urban ponds, whether they be berries, or whether they be flowers, whether they be terrestrials because of so many bugs that get attracted to those things, there's going to be different food sources than you might be used to on your more rural and pastoral streams. And so give those a shot. Now, as always, backcast matters. Backcast matters. So I like to line up when I am fishing these waters. I want to not be making a bunch of false casts. So if I would fish a stream with a 4-weight normally, but it is in an urban setting, and whether it be because it's tight quarters or there's people around, I'm going to jump up to a 6-weight. And some of that too has to do with wanting to really play those fish quickly and not making it a long drawn out battle with a bunch of spectators. Can you do that with a 4-weight rod on a large bass? Of course you can. But if you want to jump to a 6, it's going to make things faster, easier, cut down on those false casts. And as I talk about quite frequently, I'm able to control my back cast a lot better when I have a heavier and a stiffer rod. Kind of along those same lines, it gives me a lot of flexibility. While certainly on your trout stream, you may be surprised with a different kind of fish, different species of very large fish, I have found that whether it be warm water or cold water, or that middle part of the Venn diagram between the two, in cities, I'll be fishing and I'm more likely to come across the really large fish. Again, more often than not, it's going to be something like a really large carp just kind of pops up out of nowhere. And I want to be able to pursue that fish with the gear that I have. And so having something that leans a little heavier does make that easier. As far as technique, like I said, they're fish. You know, you might be casting to an overturned shopping cart instead of a boulder, but they're going to act the same way. But that leads me to kind of the other side of this. Wading is a very precarious situation when you get into urban and even suburban situations. The amount of needles that are in waterways, the amount of broken glass is astounding. I remember there was a place I was fishing outside of DC, and it was a little bit farther away. And it was within the same picture, and it, you know, pictures that are taken for underwater don't turn out super well. I was trying to get it, but it was a doll, a bicycle, and a shopping cart, all in that spot. And if there's going to be a doll and a shopping cart and a bicycle, you can be sure there's probably also broken bottles and things that are even more dangerous and deadly. I was astounded by how many razor blades those people that magnet fish say they pull up, and whether that's just from garbage or from more nefarious activity. I think that's worth noting when you are fishing in these spots. And so wading, I would say do as necessary, but to be doing so in a very cautious way with something that's a little bit more bulky than sandals. I would never wear open-toed shoes in a lot of these urban fishing situations, primarily because of the trash, and just you don't want to kick a broken bottle, much less a used needle. So this is kind of the warp and the woof of thinking about starting to fly fish in urban and suburban situations. I've had some really great experiences, some fun experiences, just some hilarious encounters with people of all stripes. I mean, whether it be someone in a business suit or somebody who just woke up from sleeping under the bridge where I'm fishing. Just some really interesting, human encounters that add a little bit of something to the fly fishing, but I've caught some really, really cool fish too. And I think there's something exciting and something special about catching this fish and doing it, you know, as traffic is roaring overhead. That's not what I want if I'm going to go on vacation, if I'm going to spend a lot of money, but there's something just interesting about it. And that might not be your cup of tea, but like I said, if that's the only place you can fish, or you want to try something different, it's definitely worth checking out. So whatever your, local city is, your local town is, see where that water that flows through it, and see if you can fish there. First and foremost, there are places where they say you can't fish between, point X and point Y in the river as it flows through this town. Check your state regulations, and then of course, check the local regs as well, particularly when it comes to accessing these water bodies. But then give it a shot. See what you're going to find. If you haven't seen someone fishing there before, don't assume that means there's no fish. A lot of times people would just rather drive the 45 minutes to an hour to the quote unquote trout stream, the quote unquote bass river, as opposed to seeing what lives in the water that's right there. Again, where I live right here in New England, it's on the rebound. And a lot of urban areas, even 100 years ago, would have been unfishable. But because of environmental protections, as well as just better practices by people in general, fish have come back to these places. The dams that have been removed have allowed some of these fish to move around a lot more. And so, finding shad in some of these small creeks, because they're able to make it up the larger river into these smaller creeks, is not uncommon. And of course, one day, will the salmon be back there? Maybe, but bare minimum, maybe there's trout that move for a thermal refuge or move around to find more places to settle up and find slower water and less predation. So lots of options, lots of opportunities out there. Go explore. I mean, that's a significant aspect of fly fishing, even if where you're fishing doesn't have that same aesthetic that you might be thinking about from the front of the catalog. This week on Casting Across, the first article is called Leaves of Three, Let Anglers Be. So poison ivy is back at it. In fact, poison ivy is at it year-round. You're just probably not going to get completely terrorized by it in the middle of the winter unless you're doing yard work and pulling the stuff up and cutting things down. But starting springtime and moving into summer and certainly even into the fall, simply contacting, breathing too much around poison ivy can be a problem for some of us. Honestly, I don't understand how me and Poison Ivy get along. There's some times where I'm all over it and I think, oh, this is going to be terrible. And I go home and nothing happens. And other times where I've never even saw this stuff and I'll get bumps. And so it's, and I think that's a pretty normal experience for people where it kind of does different things to different people. But if this is something that you want to stay away from because you know it's bad news or because you've never experienced it, but you assume it's bad news, I give a couple things to think about as you are fishing when it comes to Poison Ivy. Wednesday's article is called Trout Routes and Onyx, Charting Fishing Success. Trout Routes and Onyx, Charting Fishing Success. So I've written about Trout Routes before. I've been using Trout Routes for a while. Just a great mapping tool. And I feel like I have to say this all the time because people freak out about this. It is not a social media, nor is it a crowdsourcing data sharing platform. You don't tell people where you are fishing. You don't share your fishing with other people. It is simply a data aggregating platform that gives you information from what is already available out there. Maps, access, flow, fly shops, things like that. Phenomenal platform. Absolutely love it. I would definitely suggest you check it out. But they have been acquired by Onyx. And so if you hunt, if you know anything about the greater outdoor world, you know that Onyx is the industry leader in that same kind of data aggregation for hunting, for finding landowners, finding access, determining distance, finding topography, all that sort of stuff. And so the fact that they have joined forces with also a third kind of tier of what Onyx is doing called Onyx Fish, I think there's going to be great things in store. So I would definitely suggest you read the article to kind of find out what they have coming down the line. This week's recommendation on the podcast is Brook Trout by Nick Karras. Now, this is a classic, and if you have a fly fishing library, there's a very good chance that you own this already. However, the reason I brought that up today in the context of everything else we've talked about is this book will drive you absolutely crazy thinking about the kind of brook trout fishing that existed on Long Island and Manhattan only a matter of centuries ago. And although it outlines other angling options for brook trout up and down the East Coast, it's a really cool picture at what was, and if that doesn't make you depressed, then you can, you know, enjoy that. But then also what where things are. It's just a love letter to brook trout, the species that most Eastern anglers have such great affinity for. So I'll put a link to Brook Trout by Nick Karras in the show notes for this podcast's page over at castingacross.com. Thanks for listening to the Casting Across Fly Fishing Podcast. Please subscribe on your favorite podcast app and rate the podcast on iTunes. Then head over to castingacross.com for 3 posts a week on the people, places, and things that go into the pursuit of fish.